that was a short excerpt from the Charles Gounod opera Faust, which has been staged with some serious help from our guest today. Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Counser, and I'm joined today by a sculptor, animator, video artist, composer, and now a production designer for the opera Faust. John Frame, welcome to Words and Pictures.
I'm really, really happy to be here. I love Portland, and I am so glad to be back. I just feel very at home here.
Well, you are bringing with you a production from the Lyric Opera in Chicago, the very well-regarded opera company. And this production of Faust had its operatic debut there. And this was also your operatic debut.
Yes, absolutely. And it's all as a direct result of having my exhibition up here in 2012 at the Portland Art Museum. Christopher Mataliano, who is the general director at the Portland Opera, saw the show there and chewed on an idea of approaching me about the possibility of designing something for them for a few months. And then he gave me a call, and we just really hit it off. And he proposed that I perhaps scout out a specific opera that I would like to work with. And Faust, of course, deals with similar issues that I'm trying to get to in my own work. So I was very attracted to the subject matter. My biggest reservation, of course, was having never done anything even remotely like this, I knew that I would need significant help. But I said yes to the proposal right away. And then I had a period of about a year where I did not hear back from Chris. These are long-term planned events, as events are in the art world. So I'm comfortable with the idea that sometimes it can be years before something actually happens. But during the first year of that period, without knowing that I would do Faust, I created approximately 20 characters and set elements related directly to the story. I became very, very fascinated by the history of the story. It goes, of course, we're dealing with Charles Gounod's 1859 version of the story, but it goes back to Goethe in Germany in the early, I think about 1825. And then it goes back significantly further than that. It's kind of he's a legendary figure in, I believe he originates actually in Eastern Europe. And fascinatingly, he was kind of, my take on him is that he was kind of a traveling charlatan. He was a kind of a magician. But whoever he was, if he was in fact a living human being, a bunch of stories developed around him, and they combined magic and kind of religious mysticism and surrealism, and they were eventually collected into something called the Faust chapbooks. And they were just very thin sort of flyers almost that when this guy would come to town, or later when traveling puppet show versions of this story would come to town, they would sell the stories in these little chapbook forms. And so they were eventually collated into a comprehensive collection of them. And I went back and I read all of those. They are all over the map. Goethe clearly took those stories and forged them into a powerful masterwork of German literature. And Gounod does his own treatment of it. And of course, now we're doing our own treatment of that, trying to make it completely contemporary.
Right. It's Goethe's version that we think of today when we talk about a Faustian bargain mm-hmm. or a deal with the devil. But the way that you approach this work, you're going much deeper. You're going into how people spend their lives and sometimes waste their lives.
Absolutely. I think that's there are many basic human questions that are addressed in Faust, but the fundamental one, the core of the narrative, has to do with a person who gets to a point in his life. He happens to be an older person in most tellings of this story, but I think it can happen to any of us at any time. You don't have to be 65, you can be 45, you can be 25, where one day you realize that maybe you're going down the wrong pathway. Maybe you've invested a tremendous amount of time and energy and effort, as is in the case of Faust. He spent his entire life searching for something, searching for meaning, searching for, I think of it as looking for an answer from whatever you want to call it, God, the universe. He's seeking, he's reaching for that, and the universe never answers him back. And he realizes, I've missed everything here. I've missed love, I've missed sex, I've missed partying with people, I've missed everything that most human beings have an opportunity to experience. And so instead of calling on a job counselor or something, he summons the devil, and Mephistopheles appears on stage. One of the reasons this opera, I think, holds together so well among three that I can think of is that Mephistopheles is an intensely beautifully drawn character. He's very complex. He's charming. He's witty. He can be sinister. He can tell a joke. He's really a very well-rounded character whose ultimate goal is to steal your soul. And he just does it very charmingly.
And I'm sure we can see some stand-ins for Mephistopheles in our society nowadays.
Oh, yes. Some very large ones, of course. And I interestingly, at the very beginning of our collaboration on this project, it was right after the most recent national election, and we discussed the political implications for us as artists. Now, I'll speak only for myself in regard to this question, but my feeling is that in the face of difficult social and political circumstances, my job is actually to be the best artist that I can be. So I'm not interested in addressing political or social questions in my own work. But I really appreciate artists who answer that question in a slightly different way, or even in a radically different way. My strategy is to be very subtle in the way I approach that, try to draw people into a meaningful experience in their lives and give them that. That's what I have to give, and I want to give it even more powerfully and more readily in light of the circumstances we're currently in.
You know, it's interesting. Americans often try to separate art and politics. And you hear, if you go over to Europe and you talk to people there, they say making art is a political act.
Yeah, I think it is a political act in many ways. I think it's frowned upon in certain levels of our culture. It's not really supported by the culture generally, and certainly not in the governmental forms. I mean, we have so much money in this country, and a fraction of it could be used to support artists and opera companies and dance companies and guerrilla theater. I mean, just a tiny bit of that money could do so much to enrich the culture. And for some reason, it just absolutely, well, for obvious reasons and for many and very complex reasons, I suppose, it doesn't happen. And I think the culture is weaker and more impoverished by that decision.
One of the things that happens to Faust in the story with Mephistopheles is he's spent a life of being in his head, and now he's more embodied with the help of Mephistopheles.
Yes, and I think Kevin Newbery, our director, has really chosen to put a completely different spin on Faust's re-entry into the world of the young. He, of course, starts out as we think of him as being in his mid-60s or 70s, and he's transformed into a person in his perhaps 20s. And yet he is a person who has never experienced any of the things that are now open to his experience. He says he wants youth, he wants beauty, he wants all those things that he missed, but he has no basis for engaging those things. And so Kevin has drawn him as a person who's learning what is this stein that all these people on the floor are holding up in their hands. What's in that stein? Well, it's beer. He's never had that before. He doesn't know how to approach it. So he's very tentative about the way he begins to engage the world. And yet what happens right off the bat is his fundamental human lust begins to emerge. And he's not a person who's going to pass through his own kind of urges and find a logical solution with another person in the meeting of those urges. He relies on Mephistopheles to make that happen like this. And of course, that is the core problem. One of the core problems of the opera is that Faust gets a second shot at life, but he blows it a second time. All he does really is indulge his own lust. He causes the fall of an innocent woman, very contemporary subject right now. She never would have fallen had it not been for the presence of the devil. She is a victim of two men conspiring against her, and she's the hero of the story in many ways because she has goodness embedded in her. Faust and even Mephistopheles still have goodness in them. In Faust's case, every time his impulse is to be kind to Margarita, Mephisto steps in and pushes him away, pushes him more toward his more base instincts. And in the end, what happens to Faust is that he impregnates her and leaves her. And that's the story. And so she's left at the mercy of the community, which rejects her. She's rejected ultimately by her brother, who's her closest ally in life. She has no other siblings, no parents. It's her brother who she most deeply loves. He turns on her in the end. She is really solo in this story. And ultimately, her goodness, in the context of our story, her goodness overcomes everything else. She is the one who survives and goes on to something better.
Kevin Newbery, who directed this opera, he was definitely looking for more complexity to the story of Faust. And he brought his company from Santa Fe Opera, if I'm not mistaken, Vita Ciccun, mm-hmm. Fellow designer. And they sought you out. They definitely saw your work, your animation, your sculptures. They had worked on an opera about Steve Jobs in Santa Fe. And when they came to the Lyric, they wanted you to be on board for the set and production design.
Yeah, I think it worked slightly differently than that. Chris Metagliano contacted Kevin and said, I'm interested in working with this artist and I want you to look at his work. And so Kevin looked at the work and shared it with Vita Ciccun and I believe David Adam Moore at that time. And when they looked at it, they decided that this would be an interesting thing to pursue. And on the other side of that, from the very first contact I had with Kevin, I felt that there was a kind of sympathetic relationship between the two of us, and that extended to each of the main creative personalities that came into this. So it was originally Kevin, and then Vita was our set and costume designer, then David Adam Moore, who became the video designer, and ultimately Duane Schuler, who was our lighting designer. So the five of us really have worked this as a collaborative event. It's really not accurate to describe me as the production designer. I think that my work is more the inspiration for the production. I did, in fact, create a lot of objects and set elements for it at the beginning, but when the team came to my studio in California, I just had the room filled with everything, the stuff that you saw here at the Portland Museum, the films, all the films, some things you've seen here, some things no one had seen. I just said, let's look at all of this material together and see what we can do. And wonderfully, one of Kevin's guiding principles is the best idea wins. I don't care where it comes from. I'm the director, and ultimately he does have the say, but he's really open to simply listening to everyone say what they think, you know, whatever their inspiration is, whatever their sense of direction for this thing was. We just started casting ideas around in my studio. It was really wonderful, a wonderful experience. And I've gotten very, very close to the team. It's really an important set of human relationships, never mind the opera, how successful or not it is. The experience of doing this with these people has been one of the highlights of my life as an artist.
Right, they came out and visited your studio in Southern California in the San Gabriel Mountains. And Kevin Newbery, the director, said, "The minute I walked into John's studio, I didn't want to leave. His entire imagination and worldview was in every single corner. It showed a deep sense of the complexities of human nature and had a real darkness met with a certain whimsy and humor. I had never seen anything like it."
Well, I'm really flattered to hear that. I certainly am endeavoring to create that kind of environment. It's a very, very personal world, and it's not simply the world of the objects that you see in a museum environment. The entire surround of my studio is just full of objects, some of which I've created, many of which I've found. It's a jam-packed, up to the ceiling and over the ceiling environment, and it just feeds my visual world in such a way that I can sometimes literally take one of those objects that I bought somewhere 20 years ago off the wall and incorporate it into what I'm doing. But the atmosphere is a really creative one for me, and I think it's one that fosters people's ability to see how this comes about in a larger context. And it was really, really important that when each of the team members came in, I think we all collectively knew that we could do something with this. And it just felt right from the beginning.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And I'm talking today with sculptor, animator, composer, and visual artist John Frame. He's teamed up with Portland Opera and Lyric Opera of Chicago as one of the designers for their production of Faust. Now, in a certain way, this is coming around full circle for you, because before you started in visual art, before you started in painting and printmaking and then sculpture, you were fascinated with theater, and particularly the theater of Shakespeare. And Anthony Freud, who's the head of the Lyric Opera, said, "This is the first time John has designed for the theater, and yet on a different level, he has been designing for theater all his life. The world that he has spent years imagining is mysterious, romantic, sinister, and essentially a 19th century realm that I realized was a perfect fit for Gounod's Faust.
I think both Christopher Mataliano and Anthony Freud had that read on me, and I think it's an accurate read. I was, in fact, really, really attracted to the world of theater, especially Shakespeare, but also theater of the absurd. Samuel Beckett was, I wrote my senior thesis on Samuel Beckett. And so it was those two realms that I was just most attracted to. But I think more importantly, my experience, especially as a young artist, as a person discovering the arts, was that when I went into a theater, on most occasions, something powerful happened there. I saw something across the proscenium that moved me and oftentimes changed me, especially with Shakespeare and Beckett. Those experiences, again, had a kinship with what I saw in Ingmar Bergman's early films, especially the early black and white films. I was being moved in a way that made me want to move other people in that way. That's always been my aspiration. The way I've been touched and moved is what I want to do for others.
I've said half jokingly that the cinema is my church. But really, if you go back centuries through human civilization, the theater is a sacred space. It was in ancient Greece. These were stories of divine interaction with the human sphere. And the same goes for medieval Europe, where the mystery plays and the morality plays were immersive. There was no divide between the stage and the audience.
I think that's exactly right. I think that continues to be exactly right when film is done correctly. If it's done for those basic human purposes, if it really is searching and reaching and trying to touch people and trying to ask meaningful questions, it still does that. It's a logical extension of eight people in the desert someplace 8,000 years ago, getting together to tell some kind of a story that made the passage of time meaningful for them. I think that's what it's about. It's about creating these moments in our lives that are not the day-to-day. One thing about the way I approach this is that this is not about entertainment. It's about something else. It's about a different approach. You can still call it entertainment, and I think our Faust actually is quite entertaining, but at its core, It's really about what you just described. It's people getting together to share stories, tell stories, invent stories, and that's what we're trying to do.
So Kevin Newbery and the opera crew came out to your workshop, and they found many characters, masks, figures that they really liked, but you also created a whole host of new images and new characters for this production of Faust. One of the things that people are really responding to are these demonic assistants of Mephistopheles that are on stage, crowding around him wearing oversized masks.
Yes, I created, before I was ever under contract to do the opera, I became so interested in Faust that I just allowed myself to create whatever interested me. So I ended up with about 20 characters. I did two versions each of Faust and Mephistopheles, so I have six of those characters. Then I created about a dozen devil characters. There's a section in an earlier version of the opera called Walpurgisnacht, and it's the Night of the Witches, and in which Faust is taken down into the underworld kingdom of Mephistopheles, and all these devils and strange characters are roaming around. So I just riffed on that. I just kept going, creating these images. When by the time the team got to the studio, those 20 images were there, and there were maybe 10 set pieces that were also created for this. And again, they just became a part of the array of things that I had created. And I didn't say, well, I made this for Faust, so it has to be in Faust. I just said, here are all these things. What do you guys think about which one will work? And so I think out of all of the work that I created for this, including film, we've perhaps used certainly less than 10% of what I made, maybe closer to 5. Three of the devils that you just mentioned with these oversized masks are made directly from three pieces that I created for Faust. And the fourth one was something that we took from an earlier piece that I'd made. So they're just an interesting addition. I mean, I've never seen a Faust that had this sort of character added to the picture, and they animate the action in a very intriguing way, I think.
Well, lest anybody think that everything on stage in this production is all leather and wool and wood and metal, there's actually some very sophisticated video that's integrated into the story. And you've projection mapped a skeleton army, for example, at one point during the opera.
Yes, David Adam Moore is our projection designer. And it worked exactly in the way the rest of the production worked, in that when he came to California, I had huge files of all of these different films, which no one has ever seen. And I just said, take them with you. So he took them off my hard drive, took them with him to New York, and he began to assemble some things. And he also, I have to say, he added his own imagery that's not for me at all, that fulfills the purpose of the opera. It's not about, oh, we have to use John's work for every bit of this. No, it's really about serving, furthering the story and making it a beautiful experience to be inside this story. So he took all of that, and when he came back to California to spend about 10 days with me really formalizing the video components, I liked what he had done, but I, in the meantime, I had also done something new, which was I began to be very interested in the use of silhouettes and shadows and animation. That's something, when they were first in the studio, everybody got really excited. David brought a little Pico projector and started doing projection mapping, which is a technology where you can throw an image from a projector onto just one thing. It can be a ball, it can be a piece of a wall, it can be the entire stage. So you can really control that very, very carefully. So in the studio, all of us saw these shadows being created by the technology, and the shadows were as interesting or more interesting than what was being mapped. We all got very excited about that, and after they left, I thought, how can I use this? So, for example, in one case, I created a silhouette cutout that has a skeleton in it, and one of our devils will throw a shadow up, you put a light behind that and throw a shadow on the wall. That was the point of origin of my thinking about what was going to happen. So then I created the same exact skeleton in a silhouette cutout, a black cutout, and I created an animation table, a light table, on which I could animate those cutouts. So I began to create characters that were from Faust or from my vision of Faust, what I understood about Faust, and to animate them in these very simple, very minimal stop-motion animation sequences. And when he was there and I showed them to him, we both got really excited about incorporating them. And while he was there actually beginning to feather these things into the production, I was out in the studio all day continuing to do that. So I would work out there for 12 hours while he was doing all the tech side in the house. And at the end of the day, I would have a very short clip, maybe just a few seconds, and he would take that and run with it. So the things that you see in the video side, those are really David's work. And of course, he's taking my work as the jumping off point, but he is the video designer.
That's amazing. That's true creative feedback. Some people might label that as accidental art, but that's really just paying attention to the process.
It's absolutely paying attention. I think we all of these team members agree absolutely in the happy accident. You know, the thing that nobody anticipated, it just, you see a light on the wall that just goes, pops and goes, you just, wow, that is beautiful. I think a lot of people would say, yeah, but that's not what we're doing. And whereas in this group, when there's a happy accident, and it's happened repeatedly in the course of actually assembling the production, I think more so here in Portland than even in Chicago, this is an entirely different space. It's shallower. It's a different type of hall. So nothing looks the way it did there. And as a result, it's kind of opened us up to it again. And there have been several of those happy accidents where I think a lesser director or a lesser set and costume designer would have just said, no, that's not what we're doing. We're doing this. This is what I want to do. We see that. Any one of us sees it and says, look at that. And everybody says, oh, God, that's great. Or, no, that's a bad idea. It can go either way. But the important thing is that there's a willingness on the part of, especially Kevin, to be open to something that occurs in the creative act. And I really appreciate that about him. He is truly a giving person in the role of director.
Well, there's more information about this production of Faust at portlandopera.org, and it continues through Saturday the 16th of June.
Great. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I really appreciate being here. I love Portland so much. I'm so happy to be back in this town.
I'm really grateful that you gave up this much time because I know it's been crazy busy.
It has been a really intense experience. The last 4 days, we were in the theater, the auditorium, between 9 and 10 in the morning, and we were off at about 11:30 at night, all four nights. So it's been those are really long days. But when you have the crew together, all the singers, the orchestra, you have to really maximize what you can get out of that. So in the morning, we're working on physical things, you know, set components that have to be addressed. Or Vita and I were actually up drawing on, there are these oversized easels, and in Chicago, they didn't quite read correctly. So we've been up there on ladders drawing, you know, filling in some of these things that are my drawings, but now they're blown up quite large, and we sort of personalize them with our own hands. And that's been really fun. That kind of thing I just love doing. And It's been a remarkable experience. It'll be something I remember throughout my life.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And my guest today has been sculptor, animator, and visual artist John Frame. He's teamed up with Portland Opera and Lyric Opera of Chicago as the designer for their production of Faust. John, it's been great to have you join us today on Words and Pictures.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Conch.
And now for our listeners who might be interested in your personal projects, how can they find out more?
They can certainly go directly to my website, johnframesculpture.com, or they can Google my name with artist, sculptor, or pretty much anything behind it, and they'll come to me. And also, you can link from the website to the Vimeo page. Part of what I've been doing with this project is that the films that I generate, I give away for free. I do not sell them. You can get a DVD if you want, but it's really about making everything available as I create it.
Well, thanks again, and thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. You can find an archived version of this show later today at KBOO.FM/wordsandpictures, and be sure to follow us on Twitter @wordsandpicture.